Hello and welcome to the Families Embracing Diversity Conference. We are so glad to have you here with us this morning. Today I am here with two special guests. First up we have Hai Aim, who is here. She's here to tell us about Little Bean's Toy Chest. Hai, how are you doing this morning?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thank you.
And I just have to acknowledge the fact that it's super early and I greatly appreciate that you are here with us this morning. What time is it for you? 7 a.m.?
It's 7 a.m. Yes, my kids are still sleeping.
I can imagine. Just yes. For fun, if you're joining live, let us know what time it is for you, just to see where everybody's at around the world. Do you want to take a few minutes to tell us a little bit about yourself and about Little Bean's Toy Chest?
Hi, yes. So, hello, everybody. I'm so glad to be in this forum with you all. And my name is Hai Aing Vu, and I am a mom of two girls who are biracial, half Asian and half American, and also owner of this brand called Little Bean's Toy Chest. So our main products are a special kind of toy called toy books that you can play with and at the same time learn different things for little children. The books are very whole handmade and featuring different cultures and people from different backgrounds. So the books are all handmade by people in Vietnam and supporting the social enterprises and people who are in underprivileged situations to help them with their employment and livelihoods. So I was inspired to make these books first, in order to have more representations of people from different cultures for children to see. So these books feature all these little dolls in the books that are multicultural, and that helps for children to see that, you know, if they want to have some dolls that look like themselves, they can find them in these books. And so those are the main ideas for our books. Yeah, and I will pop the website in the chat.
Check it out. And Hayan is going to be the co-host of this session. So that means that she and Mia will be having a conversation about how to stand up to racism in your community and your schools. And I will be off screen in the chat monitoring any questions and popping up any questions you might have throughout the session into the video. So I'm going to go ahead and bring Mia in. Hi, Mia.
Hello.
Just for fun, what time is it where you're at? Is it?
I think I got the long end of the stick, 10 a.m.
10 a.m. Yeah, me too. I was hoping it wasn't too early for you. So here we have Mia Winden. She is going to share with us about a situation where she was able to stand up to racism in her community and her schools. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. You'll notice a theme. So 2009, I started blogging. My blog is pragmaticmom.com. It's on parenting and education, but there's a whole lot of diverse children's books on it. And then about 2 years after that, I started a nonprofit. It's around diverse children's books. It's called Read Your World Celebrates Multicultural Children's Book Day. So we're rebranding, so we're using our hashtag. And we basically give away diverse children's books to readers, adults, teachers, librarians, kids. And now these days we're really fighting against the whole banned books situation. But we also produce sort of like resources to help everyone find and use diverse books. So you'll find classroom kits and lists of lists to find what you need. I also host a multicultural picture book club, and that is the first Thursday of every month. It's free and virtual, and it's 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So we have one coming up. We're actually going to be using Holding On by Sophia Lee and Isabel Rojas. And we'll be celebrating, we'll be celebrating May's Asian Pacific American Heritage Month. And this book is a Filipino-themed book, but also about memory loss and multi-generational relationships. So I'm super excited about that. And then sort of like, I guess spending all these years working to make the children's book industry more amenable to making diverse stories available, I sort of pried the door open a little bit and then decided to walk through it. So my debut picture book came out in 2019. I had entered the Lee and Low New Voices competition and I didn't win, which is, I always tell kids at classroom visits, I didn't win, but I got an offer for editorial help. And then I wrote a book for Scholastic, also Asian Pacific. And then I decided to do a Kickstarter book. And this is very similar to this one, but it's about Asian Pacific American female athletes, because I have two daughters and a son, and my middle daughter in high school said, "Mom, there's no Asian American female athletes at all." And I was like, "Chloe Kim, you like her?" And she was like, "Ah, she's the only one." And I was like, "No, I know there's more." And of course there are. Most of them have Olympic gold medals, but nobody knows about them. And then I have another, my call it my sophomore picture book. So Food for the Future is about sustainable farms around the world. And it's published with Barefoot Books, and it's coming out in 1 month. I have a few more books. So this one, which was the Kickstarter book, is finally, actually, after years of trying, got sold to Scholastic. So they're going to release it in June, and through their book fair and through their flyer. So yeah, that's a lot of diverse books. I'll be, I guess, is my theme.
That's amazing. So many exciting things. Where can people find out about your virtual book club and all of your books? On your website?
I'll have everything on pragmaticmom.com is probably where, if you subscribe to my blog, I'll constantly announcing like what's to come.
Okay. I will make sure that link is in the chat. Thank you for that. I will hop out so you guys can start the conversation then.
Hi, Mia. Let's talk about the time that your high school decided to put on an anti-Asian play. Can you tell us a little bit about the backstory and what did you do about it?
Sure. So it was about 8 years ago. My oldest was about to enter high school. And so I was just at like a fundraiser at the high school, because they do this, travel abroad for high school students. And they were doing a fundraiser to raise scholarship money for it. And so I sat at a table with a friend of mine and then a friend of hers who I knew a little bit, but not that well. And she was telling me her son is half Chinese, half Caucasian. So she was saying, "It's too bad. My son is a theater kid and he sings and he's a senior and they have this play, a musical, and he'd be perfect for it. In fact, they wanted to give him a part, like a main part, but he said, no, I can't do it because, my Chinese grandparents come, and if they saw this play, they would be so ashamed. It would be embarrassing to them. And I can't put my grandparents through that. And I was like, what? Like, what's this play? I've never, I'm not like a theater person. I'm not like a musical theater person. And she's like, it's called Thoroughly Modern Millie. And she said, it's like those old musicals. A lot of them are super racist. And I was like, did you do anything? And she was like, oh yeah, I wrote a letter to the, the head of the theater program saying, please don't choose this play. It's very racist. And, crickets. And, she's a longtime theater mom. And I was like, what? And it's literally like next week this play's going on, and my high school puts on like 11 to 13 performances a year. Like we have two theaters, and the theater program is very robust, and they put on like amazing performances. The kids are so talented. So I'm blogging at the time on Pragmatic Mom, which is like sort of my main blog, but I have like this micro blog. I live in Newton, which is 7 miles west of Boston, and it's just called ilovenewton.com. It's like this micro blog, just stuff going on in Newton. So I decided I'm going to put it there. What the heck? I mean, basically, Thoroughly Modern Millie is a super racist play, and why are they doing it in Newton, my community, with like an 11%. Asian population. Mm. So I put it up and, you know, like it's a microblog, so I don't really expect much. And then I'm starting to get responses, like some very strong, you know, hate comments, and then like some supporting comments. And so it's starting to get a little heated, you know what I mean? And so I decide that, okay, you know, because I lay out all, you know, I do all this research. I lay out all the points of why this is a super racist play. There's like yellow face, and I have to explain. Blackface is not okay. So why do you think yellow face is okay? Because these comments are like, yellow face is no big deal. And it's like, excuse me. Like, how do you justify that? Do you think blackface is fine? And they were like, no, blackface is not fine. So then why, you know, so it, there's many, many wrinkles to why this, there's many, many layers of why this play is racist. It's, you know, it's an old play, musical. And so I decided like, okay, now you're making me mad. So I start going like, you know, multiple blog posts and putting it all over social media. And I ended up devoting like a month, an entire month, every spare minute of free time I had, I was going to promote why this play. And, you know, and the play's already, you know, the play's going because it's like 2 days before opening. I go and I watch the play. I tape part of the racist pieces of it. And, you know, and now like just on social media, like I'm tagging like Angry Asian Man, and he includes it in one of his blog posts and I'm tagging every Asian organization. And then what do you know? Boston Globe reporter reaches out to me like, hey, you know, I've been following this. Do you have something to say? Like, oh, I have a lot to say. So front page of the Boston Globe, you know, which then gets, you know, more reactions. So like more comments. So I'm writing more blog posts, and then there's more articles in the Boston Globe. There ends up being like four of them, not all front page, but and then it sort of like ripples, and all of a sudden it's across the pond in UK, in like their largest newspaper. And so like, so what is the result? The result is the high school decides to hold like a public forum to discuss it. And you know, they're kind of hostile about it, truth be told. But then it's like weird how just from putting it out there. So then I'm getting support from Chinese American alumni that went to Newton North and moved away, but you know, are doing, you know, are in the Asian American space to say like, no, because like what is so weird is that Newton is a very liberal town, you know, like Massachusetts is liberal, and Newton is extremely well educated and liberal. It's, you know, we're sort of the town that came out of Cambridge like 200 years ago. And like in my, like down the street from me, there's houses that are purported to have been stops on the Underground Railroad. Our Newton Museum is showcasing how it was a stop in the Underground Railroad. I mean, so we have a long history of ethnic diversity. Like we were the area, if you were a middle class, you know, freed slave, you know, and you know, if you escaped slavery and you made it to Boston, and then you were like a fine, like, you know, woodworker, and you were successful, you would buy a house in Martha's Vineyard, you know, kind of where Obama like has a house now. And then you would live in Newton because it was the only place in all of Massachusetts and all of Boston, if you were an affluent person of color, that you were allowed to live there, you know? So we have this long history. But we also have hidden above this sort of, you know, shiny surface, we also have racism, you know? And so, and this is 8 years ago, before Trump was even running for office. And it was just under the surface. Like you didn't see it. You didn't notice it. But for example, like going back to the enslavement and how we had this really, you know, thriving community in a particular area of Newton, when they built the Mass Pike, like in the 70s, you know how when you build a highway, part of it has to be straight because they use it for like a runway in an emergency. And then part of it can be curved you know, and it's like certain increments, straight, curved, curved, whatever. So I don't know who did it, but when they planned the Mass Pike, they deliberately curved it to wipe out that middle-class African-American community. Some of it remains, you know, and it's abutted right against the Mass Pike. And anyway, our town had like a haiku thing where they're like, oh, submit haikus. And, you know, we're going to put it on signs all over town. So I wrote one about wiping out, which might not have been the Newton people, might have been, you know, in Boston. And it was not chosen. but so this whole, you know, racism in our high school, like, you know, we have, you know, like a 13% Asian American student population, you know, and those kids are being asked like, hey, like, why are you so upset? Like what's the big deal? You know, it's funny. Like, what's the big deal? So they're sort of under the spotlight. And then my friend's son, who declined to be in the park, they're like, is this all your fault? I mean, it was sort of like,
uncomfortable.
Of like, when you bring up racism, you know, like what happens, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many defenders of this play saying, lighten up, it's no big deal. And even my own, like, Asian American in my own community, you know, I reached out to people that I know whose kids go to that high school or are in the community that feeds into that high school that are Asian or have biracial kids to say, like, I'm getting a lot of hate on my blog. Could you, like, leave a comment of support, even anonymously? And it was strange to me. Like, I had a lot of support from a complete stranger who said, like, she's a Jewish woman. And then my own friends are like, we'd rather take you out to dinner to say thank you, but we can't leave a comment even anonymously because, one, like, oh, I saw the play at another school and ha-ha, I thought it was funny. And it was like, your kids are half Chinese. This is like an anti-Chinese play, you know, in some versions of it, because this play is used in high schools across the country for, you know, for decades. They will actually use the whole, like, you know, like, racist hat and, like, you know, like, hair braid, you know. They didn't do that in my high school, but they literally, like, there's examples of that I found. And then other people would say, like, you know, like their kids are in the theater. They're like, well, you know, can't you, like, Mia, can't you look at it as, like, comedy? Like, the yellow-faced woman, she's such a, like, villain. Isn't that funny? And I was like, no, it's racist. And then other people will be like, we just can't make waves. You know, like, it might affect my husband's job, you know, like, you could do it anonymous. Like, no, we just, like, we'd rather take you out to dinner to say thank you. And so it's like, you know, like, you think, like, the Asians in your community would stand shoulder to shoulder with you. Like, I just assume, like, these were my friends. These are my friends. These continue to be my friends. Like, not necessarily, you know what I mean? Because anything that's too controversial, I think just Asians as a culture, we're trying so hard to assimilate and fit in. And so to point out, yeah, to say, like, I'm not okay with this. And then with so many other people so aggressively attacking you, you know, white people, that it's intimidating to put yourself forward, you know? And so I think it was like the Jewish woman who I've never even met, like, I don't even know her, coming from a place of, I know persecution, so I'm going to stand up for you, even though this is not my personal battle, but I understand it's like, it's for all of us who've ever been persecuted or faced racism. So it was so interesting to me, like, who comes forward and who like steps back. And I felt like you just needed one other person to, like, be like, no, like, I'm standing, and, like, that's enough, you know?
Yeah, that is such an inspiring story. And thank you for being so courageous, for standing up to that. Even, I think, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, or, you know, your story was, what, 13 years ago, right?
No, it was not 8 years ago.
8 years, yeah. That was the, well, that that was during Obama time, right?
But yes.
That
yes.
was still that the climate was still very different in terms of the thoughts around Asian hate and all that, and around racism and all that.
Yes, it seemed like, okay, Obama's president, so racism isn't a thing. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, you know, Asians.
I'm sorry, honey.
Sorry. Oh, that's okay. And I think there was this whole prevalent idea of like Asians as like the model minority. Like, why are you complaining, Asians? Like in my high school, like Asians, like you get into all the good schools. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like what, like, you know, like why are you complaining? You know. But it's interesting because the neighboring town, which is Brookline, it's like literally, like, well, we have a lot of neighbor, but it's literally the neighboring town towards Boston, and it has an even higher percentage of Asians. And they actually did the same musical play at basically the same time, because, you know, they always do musicals mm-hmm. in the spring. Mm-hmm. But on their own, without anyone complaining, they decided, we're just going to rewrite it, and we're mm-hmm. going to take it out of this setting where the two of the main characters are these two Chinese men who are very subservient in the play. We're going to rewrite it completely, and we're going to set it in the Deep South. So, like, there's no Asian ethnicity specific, you know, racism around. Like, there's going to be no yellow face, for example. Mm-hmm. And they just did it on their own. Whereas my high school, when they're like, well, why didn't you just, you know, do what Brookline High School did? And they're like, well, we would never change the words of a play, you know, like we're musical theater scholars. We would never, without permission. But then they literally, because they couldn't cast the two Asian parts, because that one, my friend's son, they just assumed he would take it. And when he refused, then they went to the Asian American club on campus. And those kids, one, they're not really theater kids, and two, they're kind of like, no. Yeah. You know, no. Like, why would we do an Asian, you know, racist, you know? So they had to cast a white boy in the part, and he's playing a Chinese character, mm-hmm. and then they're not putting him in yellow face, although another character is in yellow face. And so at the very end, they have to rewrite it, and they have to make up a new character, which is the mother they added at the very end, who like hobbles on stage and says, "Ha ha, you never realize, but you're adopted." Like, they totally did rewrite it, you know?
Yeah. So your comments are very interesting about having someone to support you. Just one person can support you and make you feel more empowered to keep going. My question is for you next is, if all of us adults or kids who see something uncomfortable like that, but do not have such a big platform like you, or, you know, writing a lot of blogs or doing a lot of things already on that, what can they do? How should they start addressing that uncomfortable feelings or voicing their concerns and discomfort around racism or things that they perceive as not right?
Yeah, the first thing I would say is like I literally use my microblog, which like has like maybe like 30 subscribers. I mean, it's tiny. So I would say like, you don't even necessarily need a blog, because like these days, even 8 years later, if someone just put it on Nextdoor or even on a Facebook page, you know what I mean? So I think there's more ways to have your voice be public. Although, you know, you can also, if you're uncomfortable with that, even just writing in to the school. So my friend wrote to the director of the theater, and she probably CC'd the principal. But I mean, like, just to have, I would say, like, some paper trail, you know, to say, like, I wrote about it, and here's the paper trail. And so that at least in the future, you can say, like, I notified you guys. Why didn't you do anything? If they say, like, oh, no one said anything, it's like, well, here's the paper trail, you know? And I think it's just, you know, one, just to actually do that, you know what I mean? To have some kind of formal complaint, you know, that's public or private, but something that's traceable. And I mean, and that's no small thing, you know, because you have to like you know, decide I'm going to do that, make the time, write it, you know, send it, and you know, worry like maybe there's repercussions. For me, I'm like, we're not even at this high school. Like, I have three kids and my oldest is about to enter. And that could be bad, you know what I mean? Because while she's not a theater person, the head of the creative, you know, the creative art, the performing art, the head of it is performing arts and creative arts. And my daughter's definitely an artist. Like, she's going there for art and subsequently went to Rhode Island School of Design. I mean, she was, you know, and so like there could have been repercussions, you know, mm-hmm. to punish the family who's kicking up the fuss. So those are definitely things to be concerned about, you know, like, and I didn't suffer from that, but I could have, and I could see why a parent would be worried about it, because that is true and that could happen. So I would say, you know, there's probably ways that you can find to have voice that fit your comfort level, you know, whether it's like a letter that you send anonymously or with your name, or posting something publicly with your name or anonymously, or even just asking for a meeting with someone, because mm-hmm. a lot of times just a face-to-face discussion is just a better form of communication, because even like a written format, people are interpreting what you are saying, what you mean, what your emotional level is, you know, they're interpreting. So especially like emails, when they go back and forth, it like the emotion, the tone can escalate quite, yeah. Or just like on my blog with comments, the tone can escalate quite mm-hmm. rapidly. Whereas face to face, it's, you know, it's a little bit more dramatic when it escalates, and there's a little bit more room to try to come to like a common, you know, perspective. Like, and I'm personally not that good at it. I'm good at saying I'm super pissed off, and here's all the evidence of why I am correct and I am right and you are wrong. That's not necessarily the best way to go.
I think maybe finding, sorry.
No, it's probably like, I just like, I'm still learning. So I was reading about the best way to go is actually 45% listening. And in the beginning, you let the person say what they want to say, and then you repeat it back as like, I am hearing you say that you chose this play, not thinking it was racist, but because it provided a lot of parts, you know, like there's just a lot of parts, so you can cast a lot of people, because the musical is the most popular show of the year, and everyone wants to participate, and a lot of the musicals don't have like, you know, 30 parts, you know? So, you know, so you were thinking inclusion because you can have 30 people cast, and mm-hmm. that you were thinking it's fine because people have been using this play for like, you know, whatever, 50 years. And you had no idea like there was any controversy, you know, but, you know, in retrospect, yeah. you realize that the vetting system that you have, which is three layers of vetting, has no people of color. So maybe that's where you went wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. you have diversity mm-hmm. in terms mm-hmm. of like minority representation, but there's no people of color. Mm-hmm. And certainly no Asians, and certainly no Chinese Americans.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point, because a lot of times it's not like they intentionally are being racist, but it's unknowingly. And just out of habit or out of revering traditions and things like you say, that they didn't take another perspective. So that's something that we can point out in a more reconciliatory way, instead of, you know, right, attacking them as being the bad guy or, you know, being malicious in their intent. So I think that could be a way
That's definitely the better way. Yeah. I did not necessarily do that. that's the better way, and in hindsight I would recommend that, but also it was just like I didn't find out about it until 2 days before they were to go live, mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. and there were other people who were notifying them, you know, well before, so mm-hmm. it's a combination, you know, because mm-hmm. sometimes you can do the reconciliatory like nice way, and if the machine's already moving, it might they're like, it's too much work or it's too hard. So then you have to kick up a fuss. But what's so interesting is like 8 years later, like this year, the spring musical, like a different performance happened, and they decided to cast, they decided to do something for the first time that was only BIPOC. Because also, if you think about it, a lot of these old musicals, they're the way have to cast it, all the main parts are white, like almost unless you do like a different interpretation of it, all the parts are white, you know, because that's the, you know, unless it was built in like thoroughly modern Millie, where there are some BIPOC, but it's like, you know, it's written in a racist way, but most of them in general, the leads are white or the whole play is white. And so they decided they're going to do all BIPOC, and not just BIPOC for the sake of it, but like to dive into minority stories in the same way, like now in the children's book world, we're trying to dive into minority stories to say they should be mainstream. And these stories, like we're not just one big chunk, you know, we're not just one Asian American, Asian Pacific, like we're all, you know, 30 plus cultures or more, and we all have different stories even within one ethnic group, and every story is valid and should be told. So they were sort of coming from that perspective, let's do this play around stories. And then they got pushback of like, I don't know if it's necessarily from my community, but they got pushback, public pushback, to say like, how dare you have a play where white people cannot, you know, white people's kids cannot be the star of it, you know? And same thing, like it kind of, it, you know, the part of the whole, like, you know, like banned book people, like they go viral, you know what I mean? And so that ended up in a story across the pond as well. And kudos to the principal, who is a different principal. He's also a Black principal who does a lot of diversity and inclusion work. Like he literally has written books about it. And he held firm, and they did the play, and I'm sure it was amazing. But it's so interesting that one, I think even to be thinking about that was that, you know, the community as a whole, like heard, listened and heard and learned and moved forward, where they were willing to do something like that. So like kudos to them for, you know, learning the takeaway, you know, like minority stories are important. And if you tell them all in a racist way, it's not for anybody. But then to know that there's always going to be pushback, because it's kind of like this white mindset is that, you know, we are the majority, even though it's, you know, no longer going to be true, and certainly not true in certain states like California. But that it's like this mindset of like, we can never be excluded. Like we have always all the opportunities. We have to always be the star, or the ability to be the star. We will not tolerate ever being excluded. Whereas we don't mind ever excluding you, minority people. That's the world in which it should be. But if the tables are ever turned, you know, whether it's in my community or elsewhere, the pushback is quite, you know, quite intense. And and I think that's something to be learned from for BIPOC, to say like, you know, they don't hesitate when they're you know, like not in a position to have, you know, the lion's share. And so we have to be equally, you know, front and center and forward to say like, hey, you know, this is affecting us, and like we're not getting that opportunity. And I think as a group, Asian Pacific Americans, we haven't been, you know, just because we faced racism in its ugliest form, in its most intense historically for hundreds of years, of like not being allowed to get citizenship as a naturalized citizen, not being allowed to own property, not, you know what I mean, not being allowed like jobs. Like my mother, who's a Japanese American citizen born in San Francisco, after World War II, she became a civil servant, and her brother, who served in, you know, the 442nd, you know, division in Europe as the Japanese American, you know, infantry unit. And it was like, never, like civil servant, like what's the big deal? Like, it's not even that great of a job, but it's like, no one of color was allowed to be a civil servant until after World War II. And if you think about it, like now that I'm learning about it, that meant like learning to fly a plane as part of the Air Force or becoming a nurse as part of the military and getting that training for free, which otherwise is not available to you. So they were definitely like middle class opportunities that were denied, you know, just across the board, anyone of color. Yeah. And it's not that long ago, you know, it's not that long ago. And now we have more invisible barriers where we're not like literally it was a law. Like you're not allowed to be a civil servant.
Yeah.
But if we don't fight for it, people, nobody's fighting for you. Nobody is.
Yeah. And that's a story. That's a lesson also that we need to teach our children. Right. Because we.
Yes.
Yeah, and that like how to fight for themselves. So I would like to ask another question, but I don't know if we are running out of time because I think we have other speakers. We have
about 10 minutes. So I think I don't see any questions in the chat at the moment. So I think we can fit that one in and then we will have to call it a day.
So I wanted to segue into asking Mia what actions. How do we prepare our kids to stand up against racism? And or if they see anything, if notice racism at school or elsewhere, how do they take actions? And I think one of the things I take from you is leading by example, right? Your kids, I'm sure, are very vocal. And I don't know what other things that they do.
I think they were a little bit embarrassed. Like, you know what I mean? And they're like, we're not even at the high school yet, Mom. Like, what the hell are you doing? But I think it's really to take a step back and say, like, what kind of kids are we trying to raise? And for me, like, the one thing I focused on was confident kids. Like, we have to make sure our kids are confident and have, you know, good self-esteem. Because so many things, like, you can avoid so many problems if your kids are confident and have good self-esteem. You know, like they won't be victims of bullying, for example, because if you're just a confident child, and so you think like what makes a kid confident? For me, like, you know, like I'm all about sports. I feel like kids that do sports, girls that do sports, it's so important for girls, for body image and just for them to know like my body is like it's like an athletic machine. It's not here to be judged on its physical, you know, like the physical presentation. It's my body is, you know, it's an instrument that accomplishes things. But also just to, I guess to support them and their interests and for them just to, you know what I mean? To feel like, I can do whatever I want. Like it's okay if I don't do a lot of play. I mean, it's for them to feel like, I am enough. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need to be this or that. I don't need to have lots of play dates. I don't, you know, whatever it is. Like, I know who I am. I pursue things I'm interested in. I'm, you know, I know I'm enough. I know I'm a cool person. You know what I mean? Like, and you know, for my son, like, you know, like my kids and I, we've all done hand-to-hand combat sports for a really long time. And I feel too, like that also just gives you physical confidence. Like my son was really small for his age, like one entire head shorter than all the kids, even though he was among the oldest of, you know, because of his birthday, he was among the oldest of his cohort for every grade, but he was one head, like 12 inches smaller. But because like he literally was doing hand-to-hand combat and played a lot of sports, when one little kid challenged him to fight, you know, like, you know, like literally playground fight. Like he was like, okay, let's go. And then I was there watching, but I didn't even hear him. And he was like, why wouldn't I fight this kid? He was like, Mom, I've been training as a boxer for years. Like, I know how to punch. And he was like, that kid just like slunk away as soon as I was like, okay, let's go, you know?
Yeah.
And when he was very little in preschool, he was being bullied, like unintentionally, just like this kid was just like, didn't know what he was doing. And, you know, the convention is like, oh, just like, you know, don't do anything. But we were like, no, if the kid pushes you, push him back. You know what I mean? Because that's like the playground. Like, that's not what parents say, but like, that's what I say. they could push them back, but like a little bit harder. And so I literally was on deck because I was like the parent volunteer, and I saw this kid push my, and they're literally the same size. And then my son was like, what? And then he, like, for the first time after being like whacked with a 2x4 and like stepped on, he pushed him back, and the kid looked surprised because the kid was an only child. And then he was like, oh yeah, no, that doesn't feel good. And then he just ran off and played, and then there was never any physical bullying after that. So, you know.
Yeah. I think I wonder if that kind of confidence also helps them to be more courageous in pushing things out of boundary or pushing themselves into more uncomfortable situations where, as you say, sometimes when you voice something against racism or against things that you think are unjust, you become unpopular or you become a target. And I think that, as you say, cultivating their confidence will help a lot with helping them to have that courage, right? That
I think 100%. Mm-hmm. It's how you feel inside, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. That is beautiful.
I hate that we have to end this conversation because there's so much great advice and so just a wealth of knowledge coming from you, Mia. Thank you so much for sharing. But unfortunately, we do have to end it so that we can start the next session. If people want to continue the conversation, if they want to keep talking to you about these things, where can they find you, Mia? I know we've talked about it at the beginning, but there are new people in here.
Pragmaticmom.com. And I'll if you like subscribe to my blog, you'll get all the, you know, notifications of the virtual picture book club and any kind of anything else. It's all there.
And there's also Multicultural Children's Book Day. Will that change the URL?
We're rebranding into readyourworld.org, but it right now repoints to multiculturalchildrensbookday.com, so both will work. Okay. I also will list, like, when we're doing stuff, I'll put it on my blog as well. I'll give you announcements. Like, because right now, actually, we're running an auction, our first virtual auction. It goes live on May 1st, and it runs for until the 15th. And there's, like, two more days if anyone wants to donate anything. Like, if you want to donate, like one of your beautiful storybooks. Oh,
cool.
If you just go to multiculturalchildrensbookday.com, you know, there's a link to donate anything you want, and that will be thrilled to promote it as well.
Perfect. All right. Thank you. And if you want to find more about Little Bean's Toy Chest, you can go here to find that. And all of those links are in the description of this video, and they're also in the clickable schedule that everyone has in their emails. So thank you both so very much for being here, and thank you to everyone who's joining us. And I look forward to seeing you in the next one to talk about how to nurture a sense of belonging in kids. So we will see you soon at 11.
Thank you. Thank you.